Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Welcome back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, and I'm glad you're here. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. I hope you use it to your advantage. Check it out and use all the resources that are there that are available to you. It's not like any other site that you've ever been to, especially with regard to small business. And we got a lot more exciting things yet to come. Bill Hubbard is our guest, ladies and gentlemen. William S. Hubbard, to be exact, two B's, two T's. He's the author of The New Battle Over Workplace Privacy and The Medical Privacy Rule and so many other things that I don't have time to say all of them. He is our human resources expert in the Brain Trust and original member thereof and our good friend. Bill, welcome back to the show.
Good morning. Always glad to be here.
It's good to have you here, Bill. How are things in Chicagoland?
Oh, starting to get a little bit nippy, but I guess it's that time of year. So
the city of broad shoulders.
That's right.
The founding city of the deep dish pizza.
And the Bears are winning this year, so everyone's doing pretty good.
All right, good for them. But the Cubbies and the Sox, not so much, huh?
They're kind of sliding down that slippery slope.
Yeah. Hey, Bill, I was telling the audience that you've been working on some stuff that shows that the government is liable to come into your business and say you owe these people more money.
Well, that's possible.
How could that be?
I came across that headline the other day and prompted a little bit of research and dug into it. And in the heart of the headline basically was the Labor Department collects $166 million owed to workers. And I thought, this ought to be a good story. And in pursuing the issues relating to that and researched at the U.S. Department of Labor's website and some of their material that they had released had identified that during fiscal year 2005, that department had collected $166 million owed in back wages to workers.
Mm-hmm.
And where this came from, and this is as I'm sitting here and considering our discussion, it identified that the department had responded to over 30,000 complaints during 2005, and as a result of those complaints had assisted over 241,000 employees. So I'm just sitting here thinking, well, I'm doing the math, and I'm thinking, well, 30,000 complaints, 241,000 employees benefited. So literally for every one complaint that came in the door,
eight
employees, exactly, benefited from that particular circumstance.
Wow.
So here's an issue that kind of magnifies itself.
So one employer does something they shouldn't be doing probably. A complaint is made, they start looking around, and they realize that it's writ large.
Yes, exactly. So when a wage hour complaint is registered, then the Labor Department, one of their representatives contacts you, and they come out, and they say, we've received this complaint about wage issues, and we would like to look at your payroll records. And they're under the law, they're allowed to do that, and you're obligated to permit that to occur.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they begin to look at that, the first thing they'll look at is the wage records relating to the individual who registered the complaint. But as they continue to go through that, they'll identify other employees. What about this one? What about this one? Let's see what this one says. And they can go back up to 2 years, or if they feel that there is a willful violation, they can go back up to 3 years of records looking at these issues, and in the course of their investigation, they'll say, well, we want to talk to this employee, and we want to get their perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they look at those records, and they get the employee's input, and then they interpret how they feel the law should be administered, and then they present to you, the employer, saying, here's your bill. Here's what you owe in terms of back wages. You have created a violation here. And you owe back wages to this employee and this employee and this employee and up to eight, looking at the averages here, and that this amount of money should be repaid back to the employee. And in addition to these back wages that are owed, here's a fine and here's an assessment in terms of additional punitive measures that are kind of a slap on the wrist or even more stronger in terms of that, the scope of it, of a fine that should be paid to correct the matter.
Who gets the fine and the penalties?
Well, the government gets the fine and the penalties. The employees.
Who gets their money? Who gets their money first?
It's all owed at once.
Mm. What if the company doesn't have enough to pay everybody?
Well, that's
can they? Do the employees get their money first, and the government waits on theirs, or vice versa?
I really can't answer that one.
I'd really like to know that information. I know you don't have it right now, but I'd like to know if the government is sincere as they appear to be in helping employees. It wouldn't surprise me if they didn't say, you know, pay us first.
Well, the money does have to go to the government, and then the government issues back.
Now I would like to know. That would be an interesting thing to know, is when the money starts flowing to the employees.
I'll see what I can find out.
You know what I'm saying? You see what I'm getting at here, right? So,
yes,
so anyway, we'll report that next time. Bill, do you have any idea how many of these infractions, let's call them instead of violations? Well, let me restate that. How many of these were infractions and how many of them were violations? People, you know, where somebody just didn't know. And how many of them were where people, what did you call it, willful? Maybe that's the best word to use.
The data that I looked at did not really give that type of a breakout. The other breakout that I did have was that 89% of the monies collected were a result of unpaid overtime.
Right.
And then the remaining 11% predominantly dealt with minimum wage issues.
Mm-hmm.
So it did categorize two of the leading types of offenses in terms of the most typical circumstance that occurs. And this failure to pay overtime is the one that I see as in my HR, my human resources consulting mm-hmm. activity. I see this activity most frequently. A lot of times I'm dealing with firms on issues, and we get into a discussion about pay and overtime elements, and I find that this wage hour laws, the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act, is one of the most misunderstood laws of all of the mm-hmm. alphabet soup of laws that are out there.
Who's hourly and who's salaried?
Exactly. And so many places just kind of figure, well, we can decide because we're the employer, and we're going to declare our office people as salaried and our plant or service people as hourly.
Right, right.
And that can be a violation of the law.
Right. Stand by, Bill. We're going to take a quick break, folks. Bill Hubbard is our guest, and he and I will be right back. Bill's website is hubbert.com, HUBBART.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and we're having a great visit with our good friend Bill Hubbard. William S. Hubbard is the name on the books, and the website is his last name, Hubbard, 2Bs2Ts.com. And it's a great site, folks. If you have a human resources question or issue, or you want to know about policies, employment policies, Bill, you got a lot of good stuff there, don't you?
A lot of information. I've got some articles, kind of an archive of some of the articles that I've written, and, of course, information on the 8 different books that I've published that deal with personnel policy issues, performance management issues, HIPAA, and workplace privacy issues.
Well, and, folks, I encourage you to check it out. And, by the way, Bill does a lot of work with folks all over the country and around the world in a virtual way. He can help you with a lot of the things that you need help with. You don't have to be face-to-face with an expert like Bill to be able to take care of that, and that's what he does for a living, so I encourage you to check it out. Bill, they can find your books there too, can't they?
Yes, they can.
And also Medical Privacy Rule, which is all about the HIPAA thing. Medicalprivacy.com, is that it?
Medicalprivacy.info.
.info, sorry about that.
Medicalprivacy.info. Yeah.
Okay, Bill. We're talking about this law that's so misunderstood, this regulations on how you hire people. You can't just declare your people to be salaried and then work them 100 hours a week and not pay them, can you? Just because you declared them to be, what's the rule?
Well, there are actually written guidelines that define how an individual should be identified and declared. There are five different job categories identified as executive, professional, administrative, outside sales, and there's a new category relating to computer-related occupations. One of the requirements is a minimum salary requirement of $455 a week. Well, that one's fairly easy to deal with because that's a little over $20,000.
If you're salaried, your minimum salary has to be $455 a week?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Used to be lower, but
you stumped the host. I didn't know that.
I got back at you for the last.
Yeah, time. You sure did. That didn't take long, did it? All right, go ahead now.
So then, if an executive employee is somebody who supervises two or more people, a professional, and I'm very briefly highlighting, there's additional detail than what I'm just identifying here. A professional employee typically is somebody who has a degree and is performing a job that is a learned occupation,
right,
that requires unique skills and knowledge based upon acquiring of that degree in advanced education.
More brain power than manpower.
Yes, exactly. Then an administrative position is one, and this is where most of the difficulties come. An administrative position is a job that is non-manual work, which is office-related work, but it should be work that involves a significant or high degree of judgment and discretion.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not somebody who's working in an office following procedures, but rather somebody who is working in an office and exercises a significant amount of judgment and discretion in addressing issues that don't normally occur or creates and solves problems or creates procedures to solve problems and administer issues that are very unique and very complex.
Mm-hmm.
So that's more than just working in an office. Because they're in an office, they're going to be salaried.
Mm-hmm.
Is the key concerns. And this is where most firms encounter difficulty.
So, and there's nothing wrong with paying your people a salary instead of an hourly wage. And even if you pay someone a salary of more than $455 a week, but if they fall into these other categories, you still owe them for overtime.
You still owe them for overtime. Under the law, they would be considered salaried non-exempt is the term that would be identified in the
right
regulation. But basically, if they work over 40 hours in a week, then you should compute an overtime pay based upon time and
right
a half and provide that overtime pay for those employees.
Hmm.
They should also keep a record of hours worked so that you're logging what the hours are, and then based upon that, once they get over 40 hours, then you have a computation basis to provide that overtime pay for them. What happens with a lot of these circumstances is that administrative employees improperly classified. They're expected to work a lot of hours. They complain about it. The government comes in and finds out, well, gee, there's no record of hours worked. The employer has no defense. So they ask the employee, how many hours did you work, over what period? And the employee says, I did this, 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 and this. And the government then gives the employer that bill, saying, well, this is the unpaid overtime that you owe, mm-hmm, plus here's your fines and penalties.
Did they ever, if you violate this and it becomes obvious that you didn't do it intentionally, it was just something that happened, and you're ready to make amends, you're ready to fix it right away, and you're totally cooperative,
right,
you know, you're not being difficult or whatever, do they ever demand that money be paid back and not fine you?
I would feel that those factors would be considered in mitigation, I guess would be
yeah
the term.
Yeah.
And if they feel that you're not willful about the approach and you're trying to be conciliatory and trying to demonstrate compliance and make a good faith effort and it was
yeah
a good faith misunderstanding, then the assessments won't be as critical as if they feel there's resistance and
right
a deliberate attempt to bypass the issues.
Bill, give us your website again, please.
www.hubbert.com, and there's a link there to medicalprivacy.info, which talks about the HIPAA issues.
All right.
And the Hubbert area is the Human Resources Consulting.
When you come back, and folks, if you need some help with your HR, let Bill know. When you come back next time, Bill, tell us about the question I asked you. Thanks, Bill, for being here. Good job.
Always glad to be here.
Right back, folks. Stay with me.
You've reached Pierce Incorporated. For Matt Pearson sales, press 1. For Matt
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.